So I had a run-in with my doctor. I had a run-in with a friend who disappointed me. Someone that just wasn't who I thought he was. Just I thought he was more than right? I thought he had more character than what he did. I had an issue with PWA and ended up handing in my membership there. And then I went to the pharmacy over here at St. Paul's to pick up my meds one day. And I had been off my meds for a few years, but I'd been back on them and I was undetectable. And I'd been going there for like 25 years, like they know me there, right? So I had gotten the previous two visits there, I'd gotten 3 months at a time. And I got this little 20-year-old-ish, give or take, young upstart pharmacist with a god complex or whatever. And he was only going to give me 1 month's worth of meds. And it's like, I said, no, you can give me 3 months. I said, my last visit, I got 3 months because I didn't have three consecutive undetectables. You're supposed to have three. But my last visits, with one undetectable and then two undetectables, I had gotten 3 months at a time. So this little twerp, I was burying people before he was born, like just a little snot nose. I can't give you 3 months. We're not supposed to. I said, yes, you can. And I ended up having like this little fight with him. And I'm like kind of holding back tears because it's just like a rough period. And finally get him to give me 3 months. And the office is over there, just like little closet-sized rooms. I got him to give me 3 months. And just I stand up and I start walking out the room. And with my back to him, he says, it would just be so much easier for everybody involved if you just take your pills the way you're supposed to. And I just, for the first time in my life, I pictured myself turning around, picking up a chair, and cracking him across the head. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? And that was my breaking point. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I went off my meds for 5 years. He was the last straw. And I ended up in St. Paul's, in Tennessee, for 3.5 weeks with an MRSA infection that almost took me out. My T cell count was down to 30. When I went into the eMERGE, I had a picture of my mother, which put on my nightstand, and I basically told them, it's like, I'm ready to go, just make me comfortable. And like, I was done. Because I was done. I just, like I said, it's been an uphill fight for a lot of time. But it saved my life, and I got a new, really nice doctor there at IDC, who I really like. She's been wonderful. She actually listens to you and she respects me. She's put me on a new program now that I only have to get my blood work done every 6 months. I don't have to do the sit-down appointments with the pharmacy anymore. I just call and get my Sam coming in to pick them up. And I only have to see her every 6 months now. So I'm gone from like 30 years of every 3 months, or minimally, to now every 6 months and no pharmacy visits. So, yeah, I like her. She respects me and, yeah. The toll on my body, the toll on my health of being on these meds and HIV for a lot of years is not good. I've got bad osteoporosis. Some of it's Truvada, some of it's osteoporosis, some of it's self-medicating. But I broke my back about 5, 6 years ago now. I broke it in three places and I lost 4 inches off my height. That was just after I'd gotten out of the hospital. So that kind of sucked. And then they took me off Truvada and put me on a new drug, Descovy. And that kind of knocked my immune system back, and I got shingles in my eye. But I made it through that. And once again, it's like, too stupid to lay down and go to sleep. For like a year, I had to use a walk. Well, for like a year, I had to get my groceries delivered and what have you. I couldn't even take my garbage downstairs. I had to get help doing everything. And then I graduated using a walker, which is really humiliating. It's really a kind of a kick in the nuts. And then now I walk with a cane, and I'm getting better. I can walk to like the store and back without it. But it's been rough. Yeah. The medication is not always easy to take. I go through these periods where I want to take my pills. I lay them out. And I just they sit there and sit there, and I just don't take them. And it's not like a conscious decision. It's like visceral. It's like it's almost like I can tell I'm getting poisoned by them again. Like I need to take a break, or I'm taking too much. And I like I said, with these new medications, I've been okay lately. But over the years, yeah, it's not like I choose not to take my pills. It's just like it's chosen for me. It's not a conscious decision. I just can't seem to stomach them. Yeah. Like I said, that's caused me a lot of grief over the years dealing with doctors and pharmacy and what have you. But I'm still here. And people that took all the pills they were supposed to all died. So I knew when I needed to take a break. Doctors think they know better than you and they look at the numbers and what have you. But I can tell when I'm feeling good and I can tell when I'm feeling bad. Yeah.
You're an expert on your own health.
Like, you know when you're feeling good, you know when you're sickly. I once had the first signs of Kyphosis, but they cleared up. Like I said, I've got dental issues because of my bones receding and all my teeth falling out, and now my jaw is bones and my whatever that's called. My jaw is. The bones are shifting and moving, so I'm getting new dentures done up. That's a big process. The financial aspect of this. There's a big one. First of all, when you're told you're going to die, you don't really plan for the future, right? First of all, I came here avoiding creditors. Coming here and getting these crap minimum wage basically jobs. It was hard, and when I ended up working at there's it's almost gone now, the Sheraton Landmark. It's now the Empire Landmark. Now it's gone, torn down on Robson Street. I was in Cloud Nine for 7 years. My last year there as a restaurant manager, and that's the same year that the owner of all the Sheratons in Vancouver went bankrupt. So Price Waterhouse came in and took over and fired all the management. So I answered an ad in the paper for Squirrel Systems, which is a restaurant touchscreen systems, because I'd used it in the hotel and they were looking for people. So I got hired there right away. Like I said, I'm always good at finding another job right away. I'm not one to just sit there. So I got hired by them. I've been there. I was there 10 years. I worked 5 years on the end of an 800 line, and then I moved to research, quality assurance, research and development, and then I became a kind of, they used to call me Obi Don, because I was there long enough that I knew all the software inside out and backwards, and I was dealing with the programmers, and I was dealing with the clients, and I knew all the bugs and what have you. So people, they moved me into a position where I became like a. I was dealing with their hostile corporate clients because we were late putting out software, and it was bad when we did put it out. It was like really business critical bad, like it would affect their businesses, like credit cards getting double posted or middle of a dinner rush, or system would go down, sort of thing. It was a nightmare. So they kind of kept sending me to these hostile clients as their sacrificial lamb. Me, a gay guy, they're sending me to Nashville, Tennessee, just when Canada wasn't backing Bush, they were attacking Iraq. Here I am. So they sent, there's two major corporate clients there, and between the two, they're basically compounds. These restaurant head offices are like compounds. There's like everything. There's shipping trucks, there's everything. Between these two compounds, there was an armory. It was in Nashville, Tennessee, and it was scary there. They just live and breathe Fox News. Like they're horribly racist. They're just, yeah. It's a scary place to go at the best of times. Yeah, my job was sending me there, and because I was working in software development, and I'm not sales, I'm not gonna blow smoke up their ass. And I know what I've worked in hotels and I've worked in restaurants. I know what business critical is like. I know what it's like when your system goes down. So I went there and I was completely honest with them, and they loved me. And I saved these accounts, and they were multi-million-dollar accounts. When I got back, like from an eight-week trip, I got written up because I was, being too nice to them and telling them stuff I shouldn't have been telling them, what have you. And That was that. It was just like things were getting stressful and heavy, and yeah, it was horrible. It was a horrible, stressful position. I wasn't being fairly compensated at all. I got PCP pneumonia and got put in the hospital. And even that, I had to fight. Like, I wasn't ready to go in the hospital. I wasn't, like, my work has always been very important to who I am. So yeah, I got like, put into like a quarantine room, basically for a week. Like, they put on like level 9 beekeeper suits and like to come in and see me because they didn't know what I had. And then when I had PCP pneumonia, which was an age-defining illness back in the day, I was told to go on disability. If I go back, I'm done. Like, basically, so it took a long time to accept that. And the HR person at the company I was working for, Squirrel, didn't know what he was doing, and I ended up going like almost 3 months without a paycheck. Because you gotta go to short term and then you go to long term and what have you, and it goes through EI and all this stuff. And he didn't know what he was doing, and I went like 2.5 months without a paycheck. I was almost evicted. Eventually I got my retro for that. But I went to like earning 66% of my usual wage. And I was assessed, that was in 2006. I had private long-term disability insurance through Blue Cross. It was deducted off my paycheck every week. And it was assessed in 2006, and it hasn't gone up since. So basically, every year I make less and less money because I collect the Blue Cross and then CPP disability. I have no provincial coverage whatsoever, which kind of sucks. Because I've got no dental, no optical, no anything like that, no prescription. Yeah, and I'm making the same as I was making in 2006, barring the small increase of CPP. So it's hard. I've been just getting more and more expensive here, and I'm past the point in my life where I can do a roommate again. And you know, I don't want to do a roommate. I just, yeah. So I'm kind of at my end. I've applied for subsidized housing, but I never hear back. I don't know why. It's one of those things. I'm not there pounding on their door every day, I guess. So yeah, it's been rough. Like for the last few years, I pick and choose which prescriptions I can fill. I don't fill them all. Yeah, that's how I live now. It's hard to take.
So that's a big, like, present day challenge.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, because this long-term disability insurance turned out to just be horrible. It's just cash. It's got no benefits whatsoever, and it hasn't gone up since 2006. Like, what the hell? it was a bad policy. But, yeah.
So clearly, if you were talking to policymakers today around this particular issue, that would be one area that would need to change.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. At least the employers, what the plan they're putting their employees on, don't get the cheapest one available. Granted, you know, I keep thinking I'm going to die, so it's like, you know, I've been on disability now for 13 years, and I never expected in my life I'd be on that, you know. 13, 14 years. Like, you know. Yeah, but I'm not even eligible for like a transit pass or no dental, no nothing. So, it's tough. And rent in Vancouver is retarded.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, how do you like me so far?
No, I mean, I think it's good for us to hear this because we realize that long-term survivors are dealing with a particular set of challenges that folks that are newly diagnosed today are not dealing with.
No.
And so this is like a very valuable part of the project.
Actually, it really makes me sad to see the youth nowadays not having seen what it was like during the epidemic, not seeing the suffering, not seeing the people dying. People are still dying, but it's just in the paper, and it's not attributed to HIV anymore. It's like they'll die of kidney failure, liver failure, heart attack, or stroke, or, but you know, it's still due to HIV and meds. Like, we can pretty much say for certain, like, still noted that like certain meds cause certain cancers to be exponentially more prevalent and what have you, right? Like, that's not news. So that hasn't gotten any better. And like I said, even myself, like I'm on the newest drugs now and I still can't take painkillers because my liver and kidneys are taxed just from the HIV meds.
Mm-hmm.
And years of drinking and drugs and what have you, but, you know.
It's still something that alters your life in a pretty profound way.
Yep. How I ended up volunteering at PWA was I'd put myself through a crystal meth recovery program called VAMP. It was a 16-week program, and I did that, and then I was a peer counselor there for, like, I facilitated group meetings twice a week for a year after that. And then part of that recovery program was I had to find something, another volunteer position to fill my time, and that's how I ended up volunteering at PWA. Mm-hmm. So, aside from that, I'd never even been there, never walked in the door. I never really did any support groups or anything. I just kind of bulldozed my way through and just tried to stay oblivious to it and bury it and said, just deal with it as it comes. I didn't want to be a burden to anybody. I didn't want to suck the life out of anybody because I always hated people that just suck the life out of you. The second they walk in a room, it's like, ooh.
Mm.
You know, and I was always conscious. I didn't want to do that.
So you really never got involved with any of those organizations earlier on?
Nope, not at all.
Did you have support of any other kind back in those early days, like from friends or colleagues or anything like that?
I always had friends, but like I said, it wasn't something we talked about or, yeah, it didn't really, it was just I'd take your pills and, you know, how you doing, okay, you know, so-and-so died, oh, that's bad, you know, you maybe cry or whatever, or just feel low for a couple of days and then move on, right? Yeah. You tend to get a little hardened, which is sad. I'm probably not as much as I should be. I still tend to well up really easy, but yeah, they're still losing people, still losing friends frequently. It made me sad to see the hardware store sit on the street closed. The guy's almost been like a family member for the past 32 years.
Yeah, I mean, the West End is sure changing rapidly
right
now.
I know. I can't believe the church is in a high rise.
It's bizarre.
Yeah, I'm sorry St. Paul's is moving too. That's a shame.
That's going to be weird.
It's going to be weird. It's not just a hospital. There's all these medical buildings around it. And they weren't taken into consideration. But it's going to be weird. I don't think it's just them being greedy for money for this land. Anyway, I'm not bitter. I swear. Yeah. Any questions?
Yeah. Where were you? So you weren't getting a lot of support from you know, service organizations, for example. But were you getting information from them, or were you accessing information about HIV from any sources back in the day?
I should. There's something else I should probably mention. Ever since I found out I was positive, I've never had anonymous sex with anybody. I've never had sex with anybody without disclosing it first. I was actually picking people up online before the internet was around. There used to be a Rainbow BBS, which was a bulletin board service. There was a terminal in Numbers, there was a terminal in Denman Station, and there was a, if you had a terminal, you could dial in on your modem, and like 12 people could be online at once, and it was a DOS thing, and it was like, you could see the text just writing. If you're sharing a picture, it'd be like 15 minutes, and if somebody picked up the phone, you'd have to start all over. But it gave me an opportunity to put right in my profile that I was positive. So I've always been out about being positive. I caught a few people talking behind my back about it at times. I got a couple people ready to punch me in the face because of it, because I was working in a bar and what have you too, right? That didn't help. Yeah, there was a lot of hostility at the beginning. People were mad at people with HIV, like
within the gay community.
Within the gay, yeah. And a lot of whispering and talking behind people's back. We were very much stigmatized. But there was like two or three of us that were very upfront and overt online that we had HIV and didn't hide it. I think one of them's still alive. There's not many of us alive back from. And like I said, it's more good luck than good management that I'm here.
So were you like reading about safe sex and stuff back then too, or was that?
I'm not good with condoms because I freak them a lot when I fuck, and I tend to just drive them in people. And it's like, so I generally have, ever since I've been positive, I generally serial sort and just only go with other guys that are positive. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm with somebody negative, it's totally safe. It's like nothing, no penetration, no. But yeah, all my partners have been positive.
So that was like information that you were kind of aware of, at least around sorting.
Yeah,
and
there was a lot of misinformation at the beginning. Like, there's different strains and you can pass them back and forth, and that turned out not to be true. And yeah, a lot of just misinformation. First, it was okay to take breaks from drugs, and then it wasn't, and then it was. I think it kind of evolved. It's like we learned as we went, sort of thing. Mm. But the information changed. Like from 1 month to the next, it's like what we were told to do was different. Another thing we were told not to do is touch cat litter. And I've had cats basically for like 30 years. And it's like, you know, I don't go swimming in it, but yeah. You know, I clean their litter. And it's like basically everything I've been told not to do. Don't eat grapefruit. I guess it makes one of the pills ineffective. Yeah, we're told not to eat grapefruit. I've always had grapefruit. It's not a steady diet, but I'm not afraid to have grapefruit. Yeah, like I said, basically everything, I just continued my life. I didn't really alter it too much, aside from taking the pills when I could, and not when I couldn't. Okay, next.
So if there was stigma within the gay community, what was it like? Like, what were the reactions like from, like, the exterior society outside of the community? How was, like, society responding?
Well, society didn't really know. Like, that's something I kept to myself. Like, most of my time here in Vancouver, I lived in East Van or New West or, like, the West End. I knew right away I wasn't comfortable in the West End, like, right in the heart of the gay ghetto. It's just, like, I'm gay, but gay isn't what I am, sort of thing. So I've never been like marching in a parade, kind of. No offense to those who do, but that's just not me. Mm-hmm. So I've lived most of my life out in East Van, up P&E area. And I liked it there, but my HIV status wasn't basically known by anybody else. Like, neighbors don't need to know that, and stuff like that. My employers didn't know for several years. Like, there was no need for me to tell them. Mm-hmm. Until I got sick, basically. Yeah, and like I said, it's just the West End, the gay community can be kind of clucky and kind of clucky and, yeah, I don't know. There's catty. Mm-hmm. definitely gossipy. But yeah, I heard people talking about me, and I heard I heard them in bars, like, what do you do? It's like, you know, go on with your day.
Jeez.
It was horrible. Like I said, it was disease for, like, prostitutes and drug addicts and gay people. And it's like, you know, there was a lot of stigma that went with it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure even if you weren't telling people, like your neighbors, about that you had HIV, you still would have been subjected to some stigma or heard of, you know, people saying things about HIV.
Oh, yeah. So there's definitely two different communities, the positive and the negative. Like, it was a big divide. It's not so great nowadays. the divide. Mm. A lot more negative people are tolerant of positive people, and I'm sure PrEP has a lot to do with that, and the undetectable viral loads. I've never completely trusted that being undetectable means I'm not going to pass it to somebody, so I still, to this day, won't risk anybody. I wouldn't risk giving this to anybody. I also, personally, after losing a few people, I kind of shut down, or kind of put walls up, and I wouldn't let anybody close to me for a while, because I didn't want to get hurt, but moreover, I didn't want to hurt anybody else, and I knew I had this disease, and I knew how much it hurts to lose somebody. So I wouldn't do that to somebody else, so I kind of formed a preservation mode or defense mode or whatever of having a bunch of buddies, and that way no one person could devastate me, and I wasn't going to be significant to somebody else. So I kind of, for a lot of years, just, you know, didn't open up to anybody. Like, I never had a one-on-one connection with, and to some degree, I guess, to this day, I still don't. It's just how I survived. It's the only way I could do it. When you're like 33 and lose somebody who's 28, it's like, it's devastating. It's just like, and plus, you died of something I had that I'm supposed to be dying from, like, you know. And over, like, I buried wave after wave after wave of people. It's like, yeah. There were times I was angry that I didn't go. It's like,
so, like, survivor's guilt, or?
Just, you know, it's hard losing people over and over and over. It's like this constant perpetual loss, and we're not designed for that. Like it's like living through a plague. It's like over and over, and it's like everybody that meant everything to you is like gone. Yeah, you get really apprehensive about meeting new people or forming any sort of relationship with anybody or any sort of intimacy or any connection whatsoever, because it's just hurt. It's just nothing but hurt, right? Mm. And you can only take so much of that. So you do what you can to survive. Like I said, self-medicate, drink, you know, and just put up walls. Go through life like that. Yeah. And like I said, when I could, I worked my ass up, because it's just a distraction. Keep your hands busy, sort of thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there lots of people coming into celebrities who were also sick at the time?
Not so much celebrities, more numbers. You see the numbers, you see them at the Royal, or that wasn't the Royal back then. Yes, it was the Royal. Castle had just closed, it was the Royal. Celebrities was more of a cabaret, it was more like a dance club. And mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if they were ill, they weren't really going to celebrities. Mm-hmm. It was too high energy, too high, too packed, too... but yeah, just, you know, you couldn't walk out the door or even in the building. It's like, you know, you just see people just getting sick all of a sudden. It's like, you just look at them, it's like, oh no. Back then, it's like, once they appeared sick, they were gone in a couple months. Like, there was no turning back. It was usually pretty quick once they started appearing sickly. It was pretty quick. And it was really sad too, because a lot of people were afraid to, like, touch people or, you know, any sort of compassion or what have you. So you'd see these couples, and you'd see one pushing the other one around who's too frail to walk anymore in a wheelchair and what have you. And you just see them progressively every day getting weaker and weaker and weaker, and then you wouldn't see either of them for a while, and then you just see the one, and then he'd start to get sick, and a couple months later he'd be gone too, and it was just like, it just never stopped. It was always, you know, oh no, not him. It's like, it was everybody. It was indiscriminate. Like, it didn't matter what job you had, what status you had. It wasn't really registering with females at that point. It was basically just men's disease. Yeah, like I said, even the U.S. government was basically condoning us. Like, you know, you get a message like that from the government, it's like, you know, it's pretty hard. Basically, respectfully shipped up to like a leper island or something.
How was the government responding here?
Well, there was there was a lot of demonstrations. I wasn't part of them, but there was a lot of demonstrations going on about them providing medications and ACT UP. There's a lot of activism going on, and they took a lot of people making a lot of noise before the government stepped up. Mm-hmm. They were unwilling at first to give us any support. Mm. They basically just wanted to sweep us under the rug. Mm. Yeah. Even to this day, like our HIV meds are paid for, but there's a lot of other a lot of other meds are quite often needed that aren't covered.
Hmm.
It's kind of funny, if you're in the hospital, they're all paid for, but if you're not in the hospital, they're not paid for. It's still, you know, we still go a little further. There's some other supplementary drugs that could go with the HIV drugs that could be covered, I think.
Well, especially when a lot of folks are living on disability.
Yeah.
It's like, even like a relatively...
Well, generally, if you're eligible for provincial assistance, then most of the stuff's covered.
Yeah.
But because I make CPP disability and then my private insurance, I make too much, theoretically, too much money to get any assistance from this province. So I get nothing. So I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place there. Because I don't really make too much money. Yeah. Like, my rent is basically 75% of my income. And I throw bills on top of that, and it's like, you know. And it's getting worse every year. Like, I don't have cable, I don't have... I share my internet with my neighbor, it's like, you know, do what I can. Yeah, and I don't want to leave Vancouver, because basically the care is here. If I move out to where it rents cheaper, then I'm not gonna be close to care again. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of at a point now where I kind of need to be close to care. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've lost a lot of people. I always take Remembrance Day, and I always I think of the people I've lost, because I kind of consider that a war.
Do you think we've done a good job of, as a community, of remembering this period and the folks that have passed on?
Not particularly. I think a lot of it's just trying to be like swept under the rug, and it's like it's being promoted now that it's no big deal, and it's like it's being treated like it's no big deal. It's like it's something treatable. Like, you just, all you have to do is take an aspirin a day, and you'll be fine. And that's not the case at all. And I think that people nowadays don't realize what they're doing with their lives. I think, you know, when you're 20, you're going to live forever, right? It's like, you don't think how it's going to affect you. You don't think that you're going to go on and on and on and on. You know, you're going to go downhill. And you've got a lot of years to go yet. Mm. You don't think like that when you're 20 and 25. So I don't think they're really getting that message. I think there's still a community out there that's looking to be infected just because they think there's more benefits in it. They can get supplements, they can get housing, they can get retreats, they can get, you know, all these, the food supplement through PWA and all that stuff. You know, I think there's still a community there that think they can benefit from becoming positive. There's still people that are intentionally becoming positive. I know there is, because I know quite often I'll hook up with somebody and they're like, I'm negative, but you can fuck me. It's like, no, I can't. It's like, you know, they just don't care. They just don't seem to think it's important anymore. So no, I don't think that they really know what it was like, or have any idea what it was like.
Mm-hmm.
Or know how many people died or anything. I know there's Yates Memorial Wall down there. But a lot more people than that died. I don't think it's really known how bad it was. If you weren't there, it's hard to describe. Like, just watching Dr. Peter lose his sight on every week on CBC, and, you know, just watch him decline and what have you. Yeah, it was hard. Especially when you've got it too, and you're like thinking it's going to happen to you right away. Because like, you're told it's going to happen to you right away.
It's like looking into the future.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why I'm here.
Well, what do we? How can we do a better job of remembering this and preserving the memory of maybe some of these people that have passed away and had enough time?
Maybe do like a historical biography type thing and put it on YouTube. Maybe rerun the Dr. Peter tapes, like. Because that really showed what the whole community back then, right? I don't know the answer to that. I don't know if there is an answer to that. I think I'll say it. My name's on this. I think a little less puffery and self-promotion, saying we're closing. We're the only hospital that's closed the ward for HIV and stuff like that, and you know, basically denouncing us. We're on the decline. We're like just sending out a lot of messages along those lines, but they're not. But that's not the message should be sent out. I don't think. I think that message is wrong.
We're getting the message a little bit that AIDS is over, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's chronic. It's not important anymore. It's just something you live with. It's something. Yeah. It's not. It's nothing urgent anymore. It's not. Yeah. If you get it, well, basically, most of them couldn't even tell you what AIDS are, what AIDS is anymore. It's like, you know, it's all HIV now. It's like, I don't know, is it still AIDS? Do they still have AIDS?
I don't think people talk about AIDS really at
all. Yeah,
no.
No. Yeah, it's a different time. Yeah. At least now, like, people aren't afraid to, like, hug you and kiss you and what have you. So there is education along that, those lines. Like I said, the general population is not terrified of us anymore. They're not hostile towards us. They haven't had faced any hostility in ages. We've come in the right direction in that area. But I think we've understated how important it still is to realize what a serious disease it still is. And I don't know how to deal with that. I don't know. It's not like you can't make everyone take a course. And there are people that just don't want to know. They're happier ignorance is bliss sort of thing. Yeah, but you know, being on the retreat team for PWA and facilitating small group meetings, I got to listen to other people's stories. I'll tell you, as bad as mine is, there's a lot of people that have it a lot worse. Like, I heard horrific stories. Like, you know, I survived mine and I'm still here and I'm relatively sane. Yeah, I have my good days, my bad days. And can't always remember why I walked into the kitchen, but
yeah, we've heard a fairly broad range of stories at this point, and there's a lot of horrible, horrible ones.
I heard this should be about me, but I had this in my small group. This Mexican kid who was his boyfriend. He just moved here. He barely spoke English. He hooked up with some little hustler here, and he threatened that. This little hustler threatened that if he wasn't going to stay with him, he'd go to the police and tell them that he infected him. And he did, and he ended up in prison. And Youthco got him out of prison. But his, yeah, his family disowned him in Mexico. He was just like 18, 19 years old, no English. Didn't know anybody here, and got thrown in jail. Like, a woman from the Congo who got raped by someone in the military and had to leave her four kids there and never see them again, to sneak out of the country, or she would have been killed, and never turned back. She actually started a non-for-profit group for HIV-positive African women here in Vancouver.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I met some incredible people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's amazing how resilient people can be.
It is. It really is.
Yep. Just my most, must keep swimming.
I think we've covered most of my questions. Another kind of large question. How do you think HIV changed the gay community here in Vancouver, thinking like as a whole?
I think it made it more pensive, like more, not quite as, not the, you're a free lover or anything like the 60s or anything. People don't just jump into bed. Well, I shouldn't say that. The bathhouses still exist. Like, and anonymous sex places, like, those places still exist. I think it's probably the same as Vancouver, the same as every other city in the world. I think it's destroyed a lot of lives. It took a lot of lives, and the ones it left behind are shattered and damaged. Yeah, people are pretty fucked up over this. Like, it's hurt a lot of people very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of scarring. Yeah. And there's always differences of opinions and what have you. You know, it can be a dividing line for friendships and what have you, because people that see things differently and have different views on, like, I don't use condoms, but I consider myself having safe sex, only having sex with other positive people. I consider that to be safe. Other people don't, and some people feel very strongly about that, right? So things like that can be really cause tension in the community. Yeah, I think it helps divide the community a bit. Not like it used to. Like I said, it was very black and white, positive and negative. It was like, it's come a long way, and education's come a long way, but it's still a dividing factor for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a, still people refer to themselves as clean, right? Like, I'm clean. Yeah.
I hope that's becoming less common, I hope.
I don't think it is. It would be nice if it was, because it's just, what are you implying? It's like, don't you hear what you're saying?
Mm.
Yeah. I know it's not intentional. It's just the way it is. Sometimes people, the terminology is just, you know, it'll be one of those things that's not politically correct in 10 years. Yeah.
I suspect so, yeah. When we talked about a little bit about younger folks out there in the community who didn't experience this period of the epidemic, but do you have any advice for those young folks out there who didn't live through this?
Don't throw away your whole future for a romp. Like, you know, it's just not worth it. Like, you've got a lot of years to live. You're going to live a long time yet. Like, you're not going to be 20 forever. You're not going to be 25 forever. You're going to be 50. You're going to be 55, 60. And when you're positive, your body breaks down. Like, the pills are toxic still. The virus is toxic. Or it's a virus. don't throw away your life for a fuck. Yeah, that's it. Like, smarten up. Give your head a shake. Think about what you're doing. Sober up, you know, think about it for a day before you do it.
Mm.
And there isn't enough benefits to make it worth becoming positive, trust me. The negatives far outweigh the positives. Yeah, don't throw your life away. I wouldn't wish this on anybody. It's hard. It's hard losing people. It's hard being sick. It's hard being sickly. I 2 years ago I was walking around with a walker. I'm 51 years old, 50 years old, and it's like, you know, that wasn't supposed to happen. I'm supposed to be working, vibrant, you know, not cared for, like, you know, living on insurance and kind of the pension. It's like, that's not how it's supposed to go. Use your head. It's a lot more serious than they're letting on.
I think we've kind of covered all the questions that I would have asked, but we always like to leave some time at the end of the interview just to ask if there's anything that you wanted to expand upon or add before we turn off the recording.
No, I think that's pretty much it. My life's an open book. You only got one life. Take care of it. And try to live the best life you can. Okay. I pass.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
I'll just stop this.
Okay.